Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
Denver's getting free water tonight, just as City Council votes on whether data centers use too much water and too much power to allow them to continue being built here. Our Spencer Soischer starts us off with a look at a potential pause on data centers for 1 year.
Denver has data centers and has for some time, but the ones already in the city are nothing like the data center campus under construction in the Elyria-Swansea neighborhood.
The data center industry has been really obscure about this idea that we already have data centers, like they're already near us, which is true, certainly.
Alfonso Espino is with the Globeville-Elyria-Swansea Coalition, a group pushing for Denver to adopt a moratorium halting the approval of new data centers in the city for a year.
Not only our neighborhood doesn't deserve the impact of a data center, but no community does.
I think Denver's a little bit late to the dance.
Denver City Councilman Paul Cashman co-sponsored the moratorium, worried Denver doesn't have regulations in place to protect the city and its neighborhoods from the impacts of large-scale data centers. The moratorium would not stop CoreSite's data center in Elyria-Swansea, which is already under construction, but it could stop the company from building more of them on the campus. And compared to CoreSite's two current data centers in Denver, the under-construction data center is a thirsty giant. According to plans shared with Denver Water, the new data center is estimated to use 235,000 gallons of water a day. Similar records reviewed by 9 News show CoreSite's DE1 and DE2 in downtown used an average of 3,000 gallons per day combined over the past 3 years.
Even in non-drought years, in Colorado, water is precious.
The new building, according to Denver Water, would use roughly 20 times as much water as its average industrial customer.
There's nothing like this in the city of Denver right now, and what's happening over with CoreSite is really transforming the scale at which these data centers are going to now be built at.
CoreSite says the new building is also designed to use up to 18 megawatts of power, enough to power a small city. CoreSite told 9 News this afternoon this moratorium is not about their data center. Councilman Cashman, who co-sponsored it, told us the moratorium was prompted by concerns from their data center.
Right. AI is scary to a lot of people. These data centers are new. If it's not power, water, it'll be another argument. It'll be another concern.
Right. They're talking about generators, and they want to have a group here. The Elyria-Swansea neighbors want to have a group here that gets together, looks at what some of the impacts are, and then going forward says, hey, we can have these in our neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. It's not too loud. It's not too disruptive. It's not taking too much power. It's not taking too much water. Or if it is, this can't go forward. They want to look at this before they go further anymore.
All right, Spencer, thank you. So down the road in Aurora tonight, City Council there is considering an emergency measure to limit what the city's police department can post online. This is because the police chief weighed in on legislation against the wishes of the progressive majority on council. The emergency resolution directs Aurora City Attorney to implement a new policy governing police communications with the public. They put this on the agenda shortly after Chief Todd Chamberlain made a public post in opposition to a bill at the state capitol. The bill would have required law enforcement agencies to release unedited video and audio records of police shootings to the families of victims. The City Council resolution says that council is the only city body allowed to take an official position on public policy issues. This resolution would require pre-approval by the city's communication staff for all social media posts, press releases, and briefings. The measure would also prohibit the department from posting the name and photograph of somebody who's been arrested until there is a guilty plea or conviction. We should mention the bill that was opposed by the police chief passed. One by one, Colorado's Republicans in Congress are learning that President Trump demands complete and total allegiance. No exceptions. Congresswoman Lauren Boebert, long considered one of Trump's closest allies, is the latest Republican to lose the presidential endorsement for perceived disloyalty. This weekend, President Trump took to social media to ask someone, anyone, to run against Boebert in June's GOP primary, saying, quote, is anyone interested in running against weak-minded Lauren Boebert in Colorado's 4th Congressional District? Just let me know or announce your candidacy, and I will be there for you. Boebert committed the cardinal sin of campaigning for another Republican who disagreed with Trump. Kentucky's Thomas Massie. Massie's staunchly conservative, but he's broken with Trump on some major legislation. He helped to force the release of the Epstein files along with Boebert. She says she, quote, knew the risks when she agreed to stand by her friend. She said she still supports the president's agenda. Here's the thing, though. Despite Trump's call, it's actually too late for a challenger to take on Boebert in next month's Republican primary. You would even need to have an organized write-in campaign registered with the state by now. Who knows, right? Maybe Trump's going to come back to Boebert. Give it a couple of months. Take it from Colorado's Jeff Hurd, another congressional Republican who failed Trump's total loyalty test by disagreeing with him on tariff policy. Trump unendorsed Hurd in February, threw his support behind a long-shot far-right challenger named Hope Shepelman, only for Trump to backtrack a couple months later. He re-endorsed Hurd, got Shepelman out of the way by giving her a job in his administration. Trump's turn on Boebert is somewhat ironic, given that she first got into Congress when she mounted a primary challenge against the co-chair of Trump's campaign in Colorado, Congressman Scott Tipton. Boebert beat Tipton by promising to be even more pro-Trump. Immigrants trying to follow the legal process are finding themselves waiting and waiting for paperwork like green cards and temporary protected status approvals. As our Angeline McCall reports, the immigration system caseload has tripled in the last decade.
Immigration attorneys know applications come with wait times that are sometimes more than a year.
One of the first things I tell people at their first consultation is that the timelines are very unpredictable.
Immigration attorney Ian Rockstein says some of his clients are waiting 12 months just to get a green card interview.
Since the beginning of when I started practicing more than 10 years ago, there's been a dramatic increase.
The American Immigration Council released this dashboard showing the backlog and delays. 3.5 million cases in 2016 has since ballooned to 11.6 million in 2025 for all immigration cases processed by USCIS. They attribute it to policy changes under the first Trump administration, along with the pandemic.
This is a delay that we've seen coming. We saw it coming during the first Trump administration in terms of some of the inefficiencies and the budget cuts that happened then.
MSU professor Jasmine Chavez says it's a systemic backlog, jeopardizing people to fall out of status as they wait for approval.
It is by no accident to have a whole class of people who are now going to fall out of status because now they're deportable, which means that we can go after them, which increases the quota of whatever numbers are supposed to hit.
Overall, the current delay would take more than 13 months to process without any new cases being filed, meaning more unpredictable wait times, leaving people in limbo.
And frequently we're having to contact immigration to ask what's going on. Is there something we can add or help with to get the decision made? Usually those inquiries go nowhere.
Those who know the system say it's extremely inefficient in processing quickly. With that being said, we also know the Trump administration has received a huge influx of money for enforcement, which also drives up paperwork, right, as people try to fight their case during or after detention. Kyle.
So, Angela, are people waiting and waiting just to get denied in the end? What happens when they actually get to the front of the queue?
Yeah, so what happens is, you know, a lot of people are in process for a very long time. In 2016, denial rates were about 8.6%. And then now they're around 11.1%. So a lot more people are receiving denials, right? And then that in turn also increases paperwork because, you know, they're trying to combat that in that decision.
All right. Angeline McCall, thank you. Our show was on the road to end last week on the Western Slope ahead of Colorado Mesa University's commencement where I spoke to students. It was complete happenstance that we were just there when Tina Peters got clemency from the governor. But also, most importantly, last week, you showered your generosity on that community in Western Colorado, raising about $55,000 for the Joseph Center in Grand Junction, helping to keep women and families out of homelessness. It was a surprise to them there because we aren't out there all the time, but this is what you do week after week through your Word of Thanks microgiving. And I want to tell you about a relatively new way to track the impact of your giving, which is now well over $18 million. The past 6 years, and you can pinpoint the places all around the state on a map where we have been. Go to wordofthanks.org to see that map. There you can also nominate a nonprofit that's making an impact in Colorado. If you run a nonprofit, you can put in your own story. I review each of those nominations personally. wordofthanks.org. It's a look at all the good you've done.
This is a landmark decision, not just for the LGBTQ community, but for any minority community that feels under attack.
Colorado's highest court is ordering Children's Hospital to continue gender-affirming care and risk federal punishment. I'll have a word about Governor Polis's clemency for Tina Peters, why he knows it was special treatment, and what that means for his legacy. And after decades in the classroom, Denver's longest tenured teacher is saying farewell. Next. Colorado's highest court has ordered Children's Hospital to continue gender-affirming care months after the hospital pulled those services under threat from the Trump administration. Earlier this year, Children's stopped offering medical gender-affirming care like puberty blockers and hormone therapy to minors. Today, the state Supreme Court ruled in favor of a group of patients and their families who sued to restore access to the care. They argued that the policy change violated Colorado's anti-discrimination laws. A lower court refused to order the hospital to continue gender-affirming care. They argued that doing so would likely make the hospital a target for retribution and lost funding. The state Supreme Court ruled in favor of the patients today, said the hospital couldn't use a federal government threat as a reason to discriminate. An attorney for patients says she hopes this sets a precedent to restore care at other hospitals.
What we certainly hope is that this decision has a ripple effect. There's so many children hospitals across the country that have stopped providing care because they're under attack by the federal administration. And we hope that this will give them some comfort in knowing that the states will continue to protect these children.
Children's Hospital Colorado says they're reviewing the court's decision and assessing their next steps. Meteorologist Chris Bianchi, man, did we get some rain this morning. And how nice that we got rain without, say, like a ton of lightning or flooding or tornadoes, et cetera.
This is our wettest month of the year on average, and Kyla usually comes with a big headache. It usually comes in the form of what we saw 2 weeks ago with that pretty messy snowstorm, or it comes in the form of severe weather. But this, a rare, really kind of good news water event where we're getting a lot of that water that we need with pretty minimal headaches. Yes, there's obviously disruptions for outdoor events, but this is a lot of liquid gold with pretty minimal headaches along the Front Range. We're not done with the rain yet. We're still seeing some light rain showers, still seeing some steady snow across our northern mountains in Denver. We're still seeing a little drizzle, light rain, mainly in the North Metro, but you head up into the northern mountains, the Front Range, as well as into the Medicine Bow and the Elkhead Mountains. That's where we're seeing that steady snow right now. We'll see that snow gradually come to a close tonight, though we will hold on to a few flakes in the foothills into early tomorrow morning. In Denver, just a bit of a drizzle, some showers. I think they'll get the Rockies game in. If you're going to Red Rocks tonight, definitely have the rain gear with you. It is going to be soggy out there at Red Rocks. But again, the steadiest and heaviest of the rain is over and done with. It's an unsettled week, though. Showers around for both tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday. And Thursday's showers and storms could come in the form of some stronger afternoon storms. And then we'll gradually dry things out and warm things up as we head into the Memorial Day weekend.
Tina Peters will be out of prison soon, thanks to Governor Jared Polis. Despite the governor's claims to the contrary, this is an act of clemency unlike any other in his time in office. Governor Polis knows he gave Tina Peters special treatment. I'll tell you why he knows. Because he took out a paragraph that has appeared in every other one of his commutation letters. Here's a paragraph. It says, quote, "You have taken full accountability for your actions and recognized the mistakes you've made in the past. You are remorseful and ready to advance to a new phase of life. I believe you will be successful upon your release. In short, you have shown that rehabilitation is possible and demonstrate how every offender can use their time in the Department of Corrections." None of that, of course, applies to Tina Peters, who has been famously unremorseful for her crimes, which she takes responsibility for only in that she celebrates what she did, leading a breach of Colorado's voting systems and an unsuccessful search for election rigging. Polis' letter freeing Tina Peters does not include the standard line, "I believe you will be successful upon your release." Polis better hope that she isn't. Because if Tina Peters is successful upon her release and helping President Trump overthrow American elections, that commutation letter is the only thing Jared Polis will ever be remembered for.
I'm 70 years old, and I've been teaching 40 years. I'm ready to hand it off to the next generation.
A farewell to Denver's longest tenured teacher. That is next. Teachers shape generations of students, quite literally generations, in the case of a 40-year-old teacher and 40-year teacher in Denver Public Schools who talked to our Byron Reed as she prepares for retirement.
Remember, a pH of 7 is what?
Success can be measured by solving problems.
They're creating a buffer system, and then they're going to add an acid and a base to each of them.
For Sharon Kohlbath, it's a solution she's been experimenting with for decades.
I've been teaching chemistry 35 years, but I've been teaching 40.
Kohlbath is a chemistry teacher at Thomas Jefferson High School, where she's been compounding ionic bonds with her students, getting them ready for what's next.
And I try to help them realize they can do anything they want. And that's what TJA is. We go out of our way to make sure we get them ready for college. Then you pour them into a beaker.
But her career didn't start in education. With a master's degree in geology, Kohlbath first worked in the oil industry before finding her way into the classroom.
Well, I started in 86. I taught 5 years at Cole Middle School and did 2 years of eighth grade and 3 years of sixth grade.
But this year, she'll be demonstrating her final experiment. Kohlbath will be retiring as the longest tenured teacher in DPS.
I'm 70 years old, and I've been teaching 40 years. I'm ready to hand it off to the next generation.
She's taught the properties of electrons and neutrons to generations of students.
Ms. Kohlbath's class is very interactive, and we do a lot of labs and worksheets. I'm happy for her, but we will miss her for sure.
The joy, the smile on their faces when they finish the end of the year and they can't believe they did it and how easy chemistry really is.
It's a career dedicated to not just teaching chemistry, but finding the right combination for her students' success.
Whatever profession it is, that they're happy 40 years later, then I feel I've accomplished what I wanted to do.
For Next.
Take care, you guys.
I'm Byron Reed.
Kohlbath's final day with students is this Friday. Well, we have a first in feedback. We've got some Next viewers who are bringing me their own feedback, which I will read when we return. This is the Lee family. Thank you so much. You've been so well behaved during the show, and your child too. Feedback is next. Finally, feedback tonight that came in the form of an email from the Lee family, our in-studio guest that you saw a moment ago. If you watch the program, you know that I prefer to read the negative feedback almost exclusively. But this letter really touched our team, so I want to share with you a portion of what they wrote in case it resonates with you or your family's story. The Lees wrote, "Our family moved to Denver from Atlanta Christmas Day 2023. Cross-country move comes with myriad challenges, not the least of which is finding community. In those lonely early months, Next became an anchor for us each evening as we started to build a life in a new city. You and the rest of the Next team, in many ways, became our first friends here. We were blown away at the level of professionalism and quality journalism, but quickly realized there was more. The weekly microgiving and Friday's Good News segment showed real heart behind the people that we saw each night. Thank you for simply being you and providing these transplants a soft place to land." And they concluded, "I hope one day I can say thank you in person." They had the opportunity tonight. I'll just say, we've got a couple of those notes over the years. Folks who have felt like Next was part of their introduction to Colorado. That's the best you could tell us. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.